So, hello everyone, good morning. Can you hear me well? This is my first question. I'm kind of forced to use the microphone because the lecture is being recorded and that's the only way those watching it later can hear what I'm talking about. Okay, but is it okay with you? Okay. Then, is it okay if I use English? Can you follow it? Can you understand it? Because if not, then, you know, please make sure you sit next to someone who can help you interpret what I'm going to talk about. Okay, any problems with English? Well, it's not a shame or problem. Okay. So, hello and welcome everyone. I think this is your second lecture in this course, am I right? Third already. Okay. Yes, because you have it twice a week. Oh, this is an intensive course. How nice. Okay. Hello. And how is it going so far? Who likes it so far? It's not going to be recorded, so Maria won't see your answers. Okay. So the reason why I'm here, hello, is that last year I was sharing an office with Maria, the leader of this course, and then she said that perhaps I could come and talk to you about a topic that is relevant perhaps for you as future teachers. And then we agreed, we kind of negotiated and agreed that it would be this topic, online collaboration and blended learning practices. I've never had a lecture on this topic. This is the very first event or the very first session. And imagine that last night when I felt, okay, everything is ready, I'm set, I have the lecture on the USB. Then I got up from my bed at 10 last night and I thought, these slides won't work. I don't like them. Let's revise them. So you will see the revised version, and I hope you will like them. I don't have access to the Moodle workspace yet, okay? So that's why I haven't uploaded the material to Moodle yet. But it's on its way. You cannot avoid it. It'll be there. I'm sure that if I send it to Maria afterwards, I mean after the session, then it's going to be there like that, very soon. Okay, so are you ready? Hello. Yeah, and just a very brief introduction about myself. I work as a senior lecturer in the English section or in the English subject of our department, Department of Language and Communication Studies. And this is my, hold on, I think the fifth academic year that I've been working here. I'm not a Finn. Nope. I'm from Hungary, so I'm a Hungarian in a way, yeah. Okay. So let's see what I have for you today. Oh, first of all, I have a instruction from your course teacher, Maria, that could you please sign the attendance sheet? Okay. So I add it here. If you are here, please sign it. Kind of very clear instruction. Of course, if you are not here, it would be a very kind of challenge to do it. And I also added, and if you want, please draw an emoji that illustrates or shows how you are feeling this morning. Okay. But this is optional. The signature is kind of obligatory, kind of serves your own selfish purpose because then you show that. But the emoji thing is kind of optional and fun. Okay, I added like my emoji there, so you will see. Okay, and I need this back. Okay, at the end of the session. So, let's get started here. Okay. So, let me start with a kind of criticism, starting from the end, and telling you about the structure, hello, of today's presentation. I'd like to start with a very interesting blog, which is run by an expert in the field. I'm not an expert in the field. So please don't understand me. That's not the reason why I'm here, okay? I'm not so much into digital pedagogy yet. I've made so many mistakes in my life when it comes to using Moodle and, you know, all these online spaces. But why I'm here is that I'm going to tell you my stories, my narratives, what I've experienced using online spaces as a learner, and also using online spaces, online collaboration in my, in some of my courses as a teacher. And the reason why I want to start with this rabbit hole thing and this metaphor comes from the blog of Sean Michael Morris, who is a digital, who is an expert and who runs a blog on the topic on digital tools in education. And he's very, very critical of what's going on in this field. And he already developed the so-called critical approach to it. Not so focusing on the, you know, what happens in Moodle or, you know, how you set up a forum and what happens, but why? How does, for example, an online space like Moodle shape the learner experience? Or how can learners, in a way, influence what's happening there in Moodle or any kind of online space? So he has this critical approach to the whole topic. Today, I'm going to share about my views of, like, not my views, but you will see models. I talk about planning. I tell you what might work and what might not work. But what he is saying, and what I want to emphasize, is that this is just a theory. This is just a kind of like an outline, an approach of the main points. But when you will do it in your own courses, in your own teaching, it's going to be like jumping down or the rabbit hole, okay? So you don't know where you're gonna end and what it will bring for you or for your students. But Sean Michael Morris says that every course is like a story, and I love this metaphor. Every course is like a story, and you will have your own narration of it. You will have your own narrative as a student, okay, and also as a teacher. And if we are individuals, we are human beings, so your understanding, your story, your narration might be different from mine. And I like to read it out from his blog. This is just a short extract. So he says that when I envision a course, my best hope is that students will be narrators, and it will be their characters that drive the story. And today is no exception. Hello, Otto. There are no outcomes here. Nothing that I nor you could check on a list and say, I learned exactly what the teacher said I would. Okay. I love this idea, by the way. Okay. Hopefully, what you learn will emerge out of how you participate, what you decide to read, what rabbit holes you go down, and the way you will listen to me, to each other, and to yourself. Okay. And I think if there's nothing else that you remember from this presentation, okay, then that's the point I want to emphasize the most. Yes, I'll be talking about planning, how to do it, how not to do it. I'm going to share my stories. But then, when it comes to your teaching, your experience, it might be a totally different story, a different narrative. And this is something you also have to mention to your students, that learning is not just something you want to get as a kind of service from your teachers. You need to put yourself into this, and much depends on how much you put into the whole learning experience, and the same applies to online learning and online collaboration, as you will see. Okay, so let's see my stories. Yeah, my experience as a learner. So I'm going to share today lots of examples, as I mentioned, from my experience as an online collaborator from the learner's perspective, and then how I've seen my students doing it, so from the teacher's perspective. But let me share my experience as a learner. Last autumn, I basically had no teaching or just very like small amount of teaching. I was working on some sort of research, and I don't want to bore you with that kind of research. But then I had the chance, to participate in 3 online courses. I jumped down the rabbit hole, and I said, okay, let's give it a try. Maybe this opportunity never comes back in life. So I completed 3 online courses, and in 2 of them, I felt like totally frustrated. I got bored, and I felt that I was like a bad learner. Even though the topic was very interesting, I wanted to learn, I wanted to do it, but then it was just like, blah. Towards the end, it was like more like a burden, a pressure, to complete the final things and to, you know, just to complete everything on the list to earn the final kind of certificate. And with the other course, or the third course, it was totally different experience. I just wanted to do it because it was so much fun, actually. It was so good. I didn't even think about, okay, the certificate or anything. I just wanted to be there. And even though it was very time-consuming, that was the most time-consuming of the 3, it lasted for 11 weeks with 2 or 3 video-mediated meetings in groups per week. Okay, so that was like real challenge. And I want to share, I want to tell you, you know, what was the difference between these courses, or why I think I was a kind of good learner and a good collaborator. What was the secret there in the 3rd course, and why I felt like, okay, something is not going well in the other 2. This was the so-called 3rd course that I took, and something that I enjoyed greatly. I don't know whether you've heard of, well, not that minus on the top, but open network learning as such. ONL is the abbreviation. You can open it like this. You can see that there is another course starting now in 2019. This is basically a course, an online course on online learning. So it's, and basically online collaboration. So I close it because you concentrate on this and not on the, so what can I show you? Yeah, it tells you the ONL story. It's an open network learning project. The idea is that teachers, researchers, instructional designers come together and we discuss issues about online collaboration, digital literacy, openness in learning and teaching, blended learning. Okay? We work on topics, we discuss them in small groups, and you get your collaborators from different parts of the world. Okay? I work together in a team with participants from Singapore, South Africa, Switzerland, Sweden, and Romania. Okay? Yeah, and then I was also there. And we discussed these issues, and it worked. And we developed into such a community towards the end that I had this intrinsic motivation that no matter how tired I am, no matter how difficult it is to find a space for a Skype meeting, an agora, okay? Because, you know, when you share an office with your colleagues and you can't just have a Skype chat. By the way, we used Zoom. That was the tool we used, Zoom. And I remember once I even asked Roger to let me use his office. Roger had his private office in Agora, by the way. Do you know Roger? No, a colleague of mine. So I used his office for these calls, okay? Because I wanted to do it. I could have skipped them. I could have dropped out, okay? I could have said that, you know, this is just too much. Judith is just too busy this term. There is no way that she can devote so much of her free time to this online collaboration. But actually, I did it, and I had such a, well, I show you, such a nice experience. But let's see what happened. So this is Open Network Learning, more information on this website, launched from Sweden. Very nice thing to do and to participate in. So what worked in this course? What was there that wasn't there in the other courses? By the other two courses, I'm not going to label them or anyway. They were also good. They did their function. I learned a lot. It was just I wasn't that motivated. I worked there based on the carrot and stick kind of idea, okay? I have to add two comments to this forum, okay? I have to add at least one comment to that forum. That's done. Okay, let's see what else do I have to do to earn that bloody certificate at the end. So I really worked on that kind of basis, totally different. But Judith was the same. I was the same person. The topics were just as interesting. So let's see what worked. But that made me, like, super engaged. So when it comes to any sort of online collaboration, of course, I will mention that it can take various forms. You know, you can use different tools. But the idea is that you use online collaboration because there is no other way you can arrange people come together, meet face-to-face, discuss issues, or work together. So I think, and this is something that we had in the third course, regular video-mediated meetings among seven of us in the team. Twice a week, throughout 11 weeks, okay? We used Zoom. And each meeting, and especially in the first, let's say, five meetings, we had so-called facilitators. Because when you, for your students, say, okay, you have to come together as a group and you have to discuss these issues, then it might be, yes, okay, they join in, they do it. But then when they enter Zoom or Skype or Google Hangouts or whatever form of video-mediated meeting, they enter the space and they start, like, looking around, okay? And this is what happened in the very first session of even this course. We entered the space and we just waited. We just waited someone to get started, okay? And it was such a revealing experience to see that I'm talking about colleagues, you know, not newbie first-year students. I'm talking about people with experience in meeting new faces. Even they were, like, shy, okay? They were kind of like, okay, should I start? Who should start? What should I say? Okay. So we had facilitators at the beginning who actually gave structure to the first meetings. So they were also there with us in the first meetings, and they said, okay, let's make a first round of introductions. Okay, could you please, each one of you, introduce yourself. Okay, this is what we need to discuss. This is our first question. What do you think about this? Let's make a round. So there had to be some kind of a structure, and that was very good to have facilitators, even for these experienced, middle-aged people who have even experience doing online teaching in their lives. Okay, even they were like, okay, I need some guidance. Okay. And video-mediated meetings are also very important because this is the way you reduce the distance. This is the way you make your collaborators feel like close to you. Because forums are good. I will talk about them. Forums are good. Online learning management systems like Moodle are good. emailing is fine, etc. But you need to add the human touch to it when it comes to online collaboration. You cannot really collaborate, or you cannot even, you cannot develop into a community if you don't know the others, or if you don't like the others. There has to be, in addition to the pure verbal input, something else, the human touch. It can be, of course, video mediated things are the best for that, because you can see the person's reactions. You have the feeling that you were sharing the same office, the person was sitting so close to you. But if it's not possible, whenever you have it in your teaching, online collaboration, always think about how can I reduce this kind of emotional, social distance among the collaborators. Okay? There has to be some fun, there has to be a game, you have to use images, pictures, videos, whatnot. But when, if you want efficient online collaboration to happen, then you have to add this kind of extra to it. I even read it in a study that if you send out an email without an emoji, without something, you know, the human part in it that expresses your emotions or that gives the human touch, an email sounds very dry and cold. Okay. So, and when you want students to do something together online, you want them to do it for the sake of it. You don't want them to sound cold. Okay. And I also read it in the same study that if you teach an online course as a teacher and you don't have the chance to have face-to-face sessions and you only communicate with your students online via emails, forums, whatnot, you have to overdo the expression of your feelings. You have to consciously pay attention to add something extra to your messages. An emoji, something like, I'm freezing now in uvascular, how about you guys? So something that is something extra added to the actual message that you want to send out. And you have to consciously a bit overdo it. So video mediated meetings to reduce the distance, or if these are not possible, then something extra in your messages. A shared online space, this is really good also in this course, for posting reminders and messages. When you think of online collaboration, you need to have a space where the learners feel at home, like a base, okay? Aha, this is where I can go if I feel lost. This is the space where I can find information. This is the space where I can ask for help. We used, in the other two courses, we used Moodle, okay? Or, well, not exactly the same Moodle as what we use here, but let's say a Moodle-like space. And sometimes I had to force myself to go there. And sometimes it's like I felt like pain, okay? I got a notification that there is some information in this Moodle thing. And I clicked on it and I logged in and I went there and there was just pure text everywhere in that Moodle space. And I was like, oh my God, how can you make this space feel so cold? Why don't I feel at home here? So whatever online space you develop for this collaboration, again, what I want to emphasize is that you add something nice to it. You make it feel at home for your learners. By the way, I just started using Moodle in my own teaching here. I used to be an Optima teacher. I think I mentioned it in a course this week as well, or last week. But I still don't feel at home there. I don't know how you are with Moodle, but I still need time to feel like an agent. You need to feel like an agent. You need to feel that you can actually, you know, be active, feel at home, feel comfortable in the online space. But please don't forget that there are always these technical issues. Moodle is down, the online space is down. You cannot access it as a learner. You do your best as a teacher, and then you have a vision for your course, you have a nice story about the online space. And then you get an error message one day, okay, that it's not working. Your students keep bombarding you with emails that I cannot post to this bloody forum, you know, because I get this error message. So there are always these issues. And what's the best strategy? To start online collaboration or to think about online teaching, learning, kind of like expecting this. Don't be surprised. This is part of the story. If you use technology, as soon as you switch on your computer, something will definitely go wrong, okay? And that's the normal story. I've never had like a super 100% perfect experience with technology. Okay, so shared online space. And it's good if this space sends notifications to the students that something is going on there. Otherwise, the students will just won't bother or visit the space according to their own rhythm, which might be like once in a while, once a month. So it's good if there is this notification. Then we used in the course that I liked a lot a shared online drive, like folders, something to where you can share documents, where you can edit documents together. And in a way, I really like Google Docs or even just Google Drive for this purpose, because you can see who is doing what. You can see the names there. You can see who has added what. And in a way, that's always a nice feeling to see when others collaborate. And you do something together. Joint creation, that's another magic term in online collaboration. You want to do it because you want to do something together. You want to produce, I always said that you want to produce a baby, but like you want to have your own baby as an end result. And because that's kind of like keeps things together and organized. You need to have a purpose, you need to create something together. Yes. Humor helps a lot. Something fun added to the course, to the online collaboration, so that your students will want to come back. They want to return. First, they will want to return for the fun part. And later, they will see that, you know, they get so engaged that they will return and they will want to collaborate, even if there is nothing fun in it. So something humor, fun, openness, patience. I tell you what happened in this course that I really enjoyed. We had dropouts. We had a low point in this online collaboration story. Two of my colleagues disappeared from the course. And then I thought, okay, but this is a super course. Why have they disappeared? Why have they given it up? Of course, they told, you know, I have lots of things to do. This doesn't fit into my life. Sorry, guys. Bye-bye. It's been a wonderful experience, blah, blah, blah. And they left. They disappeared. And this is, again, normal. Some students might just drop out. I would say it's a nice surprise if you can have everyone there throughout the whole story. But then what happened? And how we overcame this kind of low point of people dropping out is that, well, I don't know whether it was me, but I started doing it. I started posting images, reflections, and talking about ourselves as a group in the online space. At the end of each week, yeah, you can say that Judith was kind of over-enthusiastic, but this is what I did in my group. I posted an image like this on our online space. Summarize what we've done that week, what we've achieved. Said something like, have a nice weekend, and I'm looking forward to meeting you again next week. Okay, to give some kind of like, I don't know, but there are academic terms for this, like to express units or my social emotional presence, okay, and my commitment to this group, so that they feel that, you know, we are a group. And I don't know what happened, but after that, no dropouts, okay? So this was really nice. And of course, you might say that these flowers have nothing to do with digital literacy and blended learning. Well, they don't have to be, but I found them nice, okay? Let's move on. Yeah, facilitators. So it's good, especially in video-mediated meetings, as I mentioned, to have facilitators. Or you can also call them group leaders, okay? So if you set up an online group for any sort of collaboration, which is like lasting throughout weeks, then it's good if each group has a leader, or they can take even like this leadership thing can be rotated. But there should be someone always in charge. Otherwise, when you have a group, people will just wait for the others to do something, okay? And the approach we applied was problem-based learning. Have you heard, who has heard of problem-based learning? Okay, not that many. So this, again, was a kind of trigger to online collaboration. Aha, we got a problem every second week that we had to solve, okay? So it wasn't so, even though in my courses I do that, okay, read this background, you know, source, and discuss it with your peers and summarize, I don't know, it in a document. It was so we got a scenario from real life that we had to solve, we had to give an answer to in our group using background sources and theories, okay? So it's, in a sense, this gave it a purpose. This was really nice to work together, that you have a problem, you focus on it, you solve it, and here is your answer. Here's your group's answer. Here's your group's baby as an outcome. This was really nice. And we were also asked to write, this was like an individual thing, a blog reflection on the whole learning experience. I've heard that in some courses or when you have online collaboration, there's a learning diary or some sort of a reflection that the students have to write at the end. Well, I'm not a blogger, so it was a kind of new thing and for me, but it was nice to get feedback from my group members on whatever I posted there. It was really nice. Yeah, so if you want to read it, here is my first ever blog. I almost put it there, first and last ever blog, but you never know what life your life brings, but I can show you. And you can see how committed I was because I chose kind of like ambitious title for my blog, but let's see. Look at this. Be the change. Well, I borrowed this from Mahatma Gandhi, by the way. The own experience. So you can see that Judith was a committed and devoted learner. And we had to reflect on the topics. So if you are interested about my reflections, yeah, I also used here this down the rabbit hole idea. And questions like, who is responsible for digital literacy, opening and sharing, I don't know. Yeah, my first one is, why bother? Why on earth should I do this course? Okay. So this is really, I'm not saying that this is a very good blog, but, well, this is Judith's way of reflecting on online learning. So if you want first-hand experience, yeah, okay. Good. So this is what worked in my course as a learner. Yeah, if you want some structure to it, online collaboration can take various formats and different, but and can happen via different modes. I really don't want to bore you. I could have, because you know that there are things like asynchronous and synchronous ways of online collaboration. And there are lots of ways you can combine the two. Do I have to tell you what is asynchronous or synchronous? Synchronous is when we are doing it here and now. Asynchronous is when you send a message and the reply comes a bit later, like emailing, forum discussions, blogs work like that. And synchronous, like chat, video-mediated meetings. I would say that if there is a chance in your future courses and you want to set up something like collaboration, online collaboration, make sure that your students either meet face-to-face in addition to that, or if that's not possible, you have video-mediated meetings arranged, because those will bring the magic to the whole thing. They can be offered as alternatives to face-to-face teaching, or they can even complement face-to-face teaching. There are lots of ways you can do this. Can increase your students' engagement, this kind of collaboration, if you do it well. Otherwise, they will hate it, as I hated it in the other two courses. But it can be the only viable option for some students due to health issues, allergy. They just cannot come to the classroom to work with others. Physical, geographical distance. How on earth can you collaborate with someone from Singapore if not online? Okay, and you don't want to travel. So if you want to give them this kind of international, intercultural experience, then you have to, in a way, do this online collaboration. And why do it? Why not just record a lecture like this one that you can watch from home? Because that's also something like online. Because that makes them passive. You want them active. You want action. You want experience. Okay, so that's why you want to do it. Okay. So based on what you've heard here, and I showed you what worked, and I also made some hints about what did not work, could you please think about this question? What factors can endanger the success of online collaboration? So what are those things that can spoil it? You can think of the perspective of the students as a learner or even as a teacher. What are some of the factors that might spoil this nice story? That you don't get the story and the happy end at the end. This sounds so nice, the happy end at the end. Think about it a bit on your own. Okay. And then, could you please go to Mentimeter.com in case you have an online device. If not, if you don't have your smartphone here or you don't have your laptop here or tablet here, then and you still want to, because I'm going to ask you to submit your answers online, then could you please sit next to someone who has it, and then you can submit a joint answer to this question. Is there anyone who has issues with this? You don't have to do it. No way I'm forcing you. But this is a nice digital tool that I learned from a colleague from Singapore. She likes to use it in her teaching. And I show you what to do. So you go to menti.com. No, sorry, menti.com, not Mentimeter. Oh, my God. Menti.com, sorry. And use this code. Okay, so you go to menti.com and please use this code. And add your answer there. Just perhaps one factor or two factors that you think, hello, might spoil online collaboration between your students, let's say. Okay, perhaps one more minute, so try to finish your contributions. And you can see everyone's ideas there in this kind of like nice moving thing. By the way, I'm going to save these answers and then send them to Maria so that she can share them in your Moodle course space. So you will find the answers there. But there are some wonderful ideas here, and I can relate to these both as a learner and as a teacher. Like, for example, mentioning the importance of instructions, and those are like very just up to the point. If you have to provide very clear instructions to your students, because students read instructions like, they don't even read them, they just scan those with their eyes, okay, especially if they get them on the screen. And actually, I'm not better than my learners, okay, I can tell you, I just do, and I just want to do it. So when you send out your instructions online, make sure that, for example, you use bold font to emphasize certain things, or you underline, or you don't have to overdo it, by the way. You don't want to look it like to produce a kind of mess, but like bold font, underline, huge letters for some things, so that they, even if those who just rush like through the instructions, they get the most important points there, okay? So I think that's something very important to bear in mind when you communicate online. Now I got used to the idea or used to the habit of using bold font in my emails that I send out to students. Okay, this is what you have to pay attention to. This is important. Discomfort with electronics and or online spaces, this motivation, that's also very relevant. Of course, we try to teach the students, or the students are required in a way, for example, here at the university, to attend Moodle trainings so that you get, you know, to know the workspace. And we do that as teachers here. However, some certain discomfort might still be there, especially when Moodle is down or you have an issue. What you can do is that you, in a way, prepare your students. Okay, we are going to use this space. However, there might be some issues. There might be days when it won't cooperate with us. However, you should know that I am there for you. I'm available. Contact me if you have a problem. You, as a teacher, have to provide this kind of safe environment, safe background for your students, that I am there holding your hands in this experience. And then I read something like, there was some dead conversations. Time zone differences. Yes, we had this with Japan. I had a collaboration for my students in the previous term. And it was a kind of surprise to some of them that, yes, if you want to have a video-mediated meeting with students from Japan, then you have to come in the morning, early morning, because of the time zone difference. And some students complained that it was so challenging for them to have a Skype chat in the early morning hours. Sorry, guys, this is part of life, okay? There is no way we can avoid this challenge. But this is, again, experience and something to bear in mind, okay? And clear goals for your, like, learning outcomes. When I was talking to colleagues in Singapore, they use lots of online collaboration. They always said, Judith, you should always start with the learning outcomes. But I asked, and how do you use WhatsApp in your teaching? You should always start with the learning outcomes. Tools come second, okay? So if we have a goal and you think online collaboration and you want to use WhatsApp for that, serve this purpose, then good. But you should start with the learning outcomes. Okay, so we will close this, but I'm going to save your answers. Let's go. Oh, I'm lost. Yeah, we were here. Okay, let's, yeah, we had that. Okay, here you get the theory. Here you get the model. I don't know how many of you have heard of the community of inquiry model. Hands up in the air if yes. Well, there isn't a crowd. The community of inquiry model was developed by those researchers whom you can see at the very bottom in small font, Garrison, Anderson, and Archer in 2000, saying that, okay, if we develop online learning, if we develop, talk about online spaces, collaboration, e-learning, whatnot, then how, what model can summarize the experience? What is the theory? What is the model? What are the terms that we can use if we want to do research on it or if we want to talk about it at a, as a general level? And this community of inquiries model says that in online learning, online collaboration, we aim for a kind of community of inquiry, like an ideal group experience, an ideal learning experience, which happens, you can see this is in the middle, educational experience, this is the super goal, this is what we want. If these three types of presences, sorry, I could even use this one, overlap nicely and support each other. What are these three presences? Cognitive presence, these are the learning outcomes. This is what students learn there. So if there is something that they take home from the course in their minds, okay? So what they learn about a topic. Then cognitive presence is there, okay? So they are there in the online learning space not just because they want to discuss what they had for breakfast, but they are there because they want to reflect on a topic and they, you know, take something home from that, then that's cognitive presence. Then you have so-called social presence. According to the model, educational experience in online learning happens if the participants are engaged, they interact, and they are there with their social and, I would add, emotional presence. It means that when your group member sends you a question, then you reply to it nicely, politely, and as soon as possible. You don't want to leave a reply unanswered. You want to engage in a conversation with others. You want to ask, how are you today? What's the weather like in, I don't know, in Japan at this time of the day, okay? You want to relate to the others also as members of a group. And if it is not there, then, you know, the whole thing will be very dry and just focusing on the facts and on the topics. And in a way, the two things facilitate, I mean, the two presences and all the three presences, in a way, support each other. And then teaching presence. This is like the teacher's input to the whole thing, the instructions, the setting up of the online spaces, and teacher, on one hand, teacher presence, that I am there, I provide instructions, I answer your questions, I add myself to it. But not just teacher presence. Teaching presence can also refer to you teach one another in the online space. You learn from each other. You share ideas. And this is also a teaching learning experience that takes place among or between the learners. Okay, so this is the model. Of course, many people have criticized it, but if you want to read more about it, then I added some sources. Yeah, I just want to emphasize that, I cannot emphasize this enough, that out of the three presences that I described, I found that this was one of the key elements to the whole learning experience. If this is not there, your learners won't become engaged. They do just do it like, okay, let's do it for the sake of earning those credits. Let's do it just for the sake of earning the certificate or the grade. Okay. So you have to encourage the development of this. Another key term related to social emotional presence, immediacy. It means reducing this distance that is between teacher and student. Of course, you have to keep certain distance, but especially in online collaboration, in emailing, you have to give, as I mentioned, the human touch to it. For example, by sharing stories that reveal something more than just your pure teacher identity, or using images, videos. And also, you want to remind your students of this immediacy, that yes, you react, you do it, you don't disappear and be, you know, silent for weeks, but you are there for the others to support. And then, this is like the optimal experience, what you can achieve in online collaboration. And I like to cite a Hungarian, well, I have to cite a Hungarian in all of my lectures, a Hungarian or an American Hungarian who made a career, by the way, usually Hungarians make careers outside their countries. So an American Hungarian psychologist, social psychologist, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, who said that it might happen in some cases that some of these, the peoples who collaborate, develop into a community. Because collaboration doesn't equal community right away. But when you develop this intrinsic motivation that you want to do it, you want to help the others, you go and attend your next meeting, then you have the feeling of team flow. It means that you don't worry about, I don't know, basically anything. You don't worry about how much time it will take. You don't worry about the whether you get the certificate or not. It is just a kind of optimal experience. I have a nice quote for this. So Csikszentmihalyi wrote that, for example, surgeons say that during a difficult operation, they have the sensation that the entire operating team is a single orgasm, moved by the same purpose. They describe it as a ballet in which the individual is subordinated to the group performance, and all involved share in the feeling of harmony and power. Wow! So this is the best you can have in online collaboration. So if you experience it as a learner, or if your students experience it, I think that's like nirvana and everything. So that's the top experience. And if you read my blog carefully, you will see that my last post is about this theme flow, because in this international collaboration, in the third course, finally or eventually, we did it because we felt that if I'm not there for the others to help, then they won't succeed, then my group fails, okay? And I spent my nights reading books on e-learning. Can you imagine this? Like my free time. Gosh! Okay. Just because I didn't want to let them down. I wanted to see them. I wanted to meet them. And now we agreed that on the last Friday of each month, even though the course has ended, we are going to meet again just to share how things are, you know, going with us. Because we developed into a community. So this is nice, but it doesn't necessarily happen in all types of online collaboration. Okay, just a few words on problem-based learning. As I mentioned, this is, in addition to all the things I mentioned, this is another key factor or a good thing to have when your group gets a problem, a scenario, and then the task was, is first you focus on the scenario. I show you one of the examples we got. As a group, you read it, you understand it, each one of you, and then you investigate it together. What is it? What does it mean for me? How can I relate to this problem? What could be some of the theories and, theories and background sources that can help us understand this scenario and our solution to this? And then share. Okay, this is our group's answer. And you share it in the wild. I mean, you can share it like for all course participants, or you can just go wild and share it on somewhere like a public forum or something. But you want to share it. This is your group's baby. You want to share the answer. So we use this, or it's in problem-based learning. If you combine this with online collaboration, I think that's a very good thing to do. You give a problem to the group, and you ask them to produce an answer. Yes. So this was, for example, a sample scenario. I'm going to read it out. Most people I've come across have a rather weak idea of what it really means to learn collaboratively. Mostly we fall back into the group work mode from school. We divide tasks between us and glue them onto the same board when it comes to accounting of a group project. When digital tools are inserted into this equation, things tend to get even worse. If one person in the group happens to be familiar with the tool, then work lands in her or his lap. I would like to add an extra dimension to the course I'm leading by introducing collaborative elements. But how can I get people to really recognize the value of becoming part of a learning community and collaborate with their peers in a way that makes use of all the different competencies that group members bring into the work? Yes, this is long. Yes, you have to understand it. Imagine this is a scenario describing, well, not imagine, but this is a scenario meant about a teacher. Okay, I, as a teacher, want to use online collaboration in a course. Here is my question. Here is my problem. And in the course then that I attended, we had to produce an answer to this scenario, to this question. So how can you get people really collaborate with their peers? So what is the answer to this? So we focused on this part of the scenario, we chose our focus, and then we produced an answer. It's not an easy question, by the way. And we used background sources, consulted background sources, and then we had these video-mediated meetings, and we always talked about these issues. You might say, well, this is kind of boring, okay? But we were so interested, all of this related to our profession so closely that we just got interested. And then our group's answer, ONL stands for the course name, Open Network Learning, PBL 7 was our group name, Problem-Based Learning Group 7. There were, I think, 12 groups in the whole course. So we called ourselves PBL7. So we found that very important is the pedagogical design. When you design online collaboration, you come up with a structure, you come up with a plan, you produce, you start with the learning outcomes, you develop very good tasks. We called it cognitive scaffolding. But you always think about the social-emotional side, the facilitation. How can you reduce the distance between the learners? How can you be present as a teacher with your personality in the whole story? Oh, and then, what sort of digital tools you would use for the online collaboration? So we centered on these issues. I'm just going to show you our group's answer, because the task was also to use a digital tool that you don't know when you produce the answer. And, well, we created this kind of poster thing as our answer to this problem or scenario. You can see that the pedagogical design is mentioned here, the elements of the social-emotional scaffolding are mentioned there, and the digital tools there, and we provided even the... So it's like perhaps too much for an answer, and you might think, okay, this is like too theoretical, you wanted a practical answer to this question. But our task, because we were not students, but already like higher level, we had to produce something theoretical. You can check out the whole solution by clicking on this link. And what is fun is that if you scroll here, you get information about each element. So this is like a presentation tool. And you can see here our comments on each part: pedagogical design, social-emotional scaffolding, and some of the digital tools that you can use for online collaboration. So I'm sharing this with you. You can go there, check out some of these tools. What are the ones that you might want to use? So this was our group's answer. Your students don't need to produce anything like this, very complicated. What I say is something jointly created. It can be, it might be just, I don't know, a poster or a document or a video or something that they do together as a group. If you want more information on digital tools in teaching, I'm sharing here a few links. One of them is a Padlet that was developed by Dr. Mary Ellis, who was visiting our department in the fall, and she had a whole workshop for students of the department on ICT tools. And that's a Padlet wall with full of information and links to different tools you can use. Yeah, this is my ideal friend, my imaginary friend, a friend I want to have whenever it comes to online collaboration design. I want to have an instructional designer sitting next to me. Because it's not easy, you will see, to put together something. Yeah, let's do online collaboration in my teaching. Yes, I'll do that. And then when you start doing it, you will realize that it's an awful lot of work, and there are so many so-called rabbit holes and traps that you might step into, that you want to have a supporter. And this is a profession, I don't know whether you've heard of this, that there are people, and I'm dreaming about working together with one of them, who can combine, this is their expertise, how to use digital tools for a certain set of learning goals. They combine pedagogy and digital tools, ICT skills. This is their profession. They sit down with the teacher and they tell the teacher, okay, this is what you want to have in your course. Then forget Moodle, go to WhatsApp because students will like it more and I think this serves your learning goals better. Okay. And I've heard that, for example, there are these instructional designers already in Uvascula. I met one of them on the bus yesterday. She works for YAMC as an instructional designer. We don't have these guys here on our campus yet. But whenever we have a meeting, Judith raises her hand and says, you know, we could use some of, you know, instructional designers. These would be so good to have. So read about it. These are your supporters, helpers. So it's good to have, whenever you design something like a lonely cowboy, to have a friend who helps you. A few words on blended learning. Basically, online collaboration can be integrated in a blended learning format. Oh, how much time do I have? I'm totally confused. Until 10? And how are you, is it okay? Can you still concentrate? You know, when you teach, time flies. You don't feel cold, you don't get bored, you just want to concentrate and spread the knowledge. But when you listen, that's a different narrative. That's a different story. You might be on your Facebook, you might be, I don't know, somewhere else, but that's kind of boring. So if you are with me, that's good. If not, then I don't know. That's not so good, but still tolerable. So blended learning. I promised Maria that I would also talk about this, even though I don't have that much experience, or I can say zero experience, but don't tell this to Maria. It might be, because blended learning, it depends how you define it. If you see like face-to-face with online learning, then everyone who is using Moodle here is doing some sort of blended learning. Am I right? Yes. So in a way, I'm using blended learning whenever I'm sending material to Moodle or I set up a forum. So it has different definitions, formats, variations. But the idea is that, yes, you do something in a combined version. You do face-to-face and you do something online. So far, there is not much excitement in the story. So use technology to combine in-class and out-of-class learning, yes. Yeah, basically I'm repeating myself, but okay. You combine face-to-face and online teaching and learning. But I'm going to share a story on this, and this is a story from Singapore. I had the chance, yeah, my last year was totally crazy. It's like Judith is going global, Judith is going digital, Judith is experimenting, jumping down rabbit holes and whatnot. But I had the chance to spend 1 month in Singapore, business trip. Just strictly business trip, to meet lecturers there and to explore what sort of practices they have in terms of online learning, collaboration, digital tools. Yes. They are a bit ahead of us, no, like miles, but we can also get there. And I'm going to share how they developed a blended learning course and why. We even had Dr. Mary Alice from Singapore coming here in the fall, autumn, to share with my colleagues about this blended learning course. And she gave me permission to share her materials with anyone interested. So when you see Padlet there and Mary Alice, then it's her materials. This is not mine. But it's really informative and, well, I can show you. I'm not going through this because this is like her stuff and there is simply no time for it. But just to show you that it has lots of things, background sources, examples about blended learning. Like, look at this. I think this is amazing, isn't it? Like an information package on the topic. But I'd like to go back to my very simple PowerPoint. So please go there. If you're interested in blended learning, that information package is very good for you. You don't have to read everything there, but nice. So what she said is that the reason why they developed one of their traditional courses, it was a communication skills course for teachers like you, like communication, oral, written, combined. Traditional course it was, face-to-face, like regular meetings. And then they said, okay, we need to change this. We want to offer more flexibility to our students. We don't necessarily require them to come and meet us every single week. What if we do things in a slightly different way? What if we give them options to choose from? What happens then? Can you do that in a communication skills course? They even had pronunciation as part of the course, by the way. Can you do it online? Can you learn pronunciation online? Wow. So one of the reasons Mary said they decided to blend face-to-face with online was the flexibility that it offers to some of the students. But what was the trigger for developing blended learning courses, or this course? NIE is not like a code, it stands for the National Institute of Education in Singapore. This is the place where they train teachers. NIE, National Institute of Singapore. So what was, you know, trigger? Trigger is like the spark. The immediate cause. Is there anyone who knows? It's good, yeah, you offer more flexibility, but usually there is like a trigger. I show you. That was the reason. Anyone who is good at biology? What we can see here? That was the trigger. And when this thing came, then there was no way they could postpone or put this off. They had to offer blended learning. They had to think of e-learning, online collaboration, because of the SARS epidemic of 2003. Okay. So they had to think of a way, because they had to close down the school building. Okay, students couldn't come to the face-to-face sessions. They had to think of a way of like, okay, but then we need to continue with the course. So we have to somehow arrange solutions for such a situation. And this is when they decided, okay, then let's redesign the course. This is already like a kind of feedback or an insight that Mary shared about the outcome. It was like implementing a blended course that allows students to individually select their mode of study for particular modules, allowed for greater self-direction and helped meet the learner's individual needs and preferences. I tell you what this meant in practice. The course was changed in a way that everyone had to come to the first session. I think this is how things work here as well, by the way. You have to come to the first session. And then the course was introduced, and the tasks, and the learning outcomes, and the online space. And then the following was mentioned to the students. We'll have perhaps two more or three more face-to-face sessions that are obligatory for everyone. I think it was the last one, and perhaps there was a checkpoint in the middle. And in between those sessions, and this is something I still can't digest, you as a student can choose. I will be here as a teacher every week available for you guys. So if you want to discuss this topic or learn it from me, I'm here as a source. However, you are free to choose the online way. If you say that you want to watch the instructional video on pronunciation, do the task, and submit the assignment online, that's also perfect. Okay. And I asked Mary, okay, but how do you know how many students will show up in your class if they get total freedom? And she said, I never knew how many would come. I had to be prepared for seeing 20, 30, or just one. If it's just one single student, I need to be there as a source and, you know, discuss. But then, of course, it won't be like a mass lecture here. You sit down with the student or with those students and you discuss it in a different way. But she had to be ready, in a way, on her toes all the time, because she never knew how many would show up. But if you ask me, this is crazy system. But she said that she got used to it. So you develop a routine. You get used to this kind of arrangement. And the students just loved the flexibility of it. So, and I asked Mary, and I asked it from her twice. Really? You never knew how many students would show up and you would still be there? And she said yes. And I said, but I'm just telling this story. This is one way, one form of blended learning. So it's like on a whole spectrum of like what we are doing here face-to-face and then Moodle to what they are doing there, this total flexibility with certain checkpoints. So what are some of the tools they used to develop this course into a blended format with face-to-face and online things? They also had their Moodle, they had Blackboard, or LMS, Learning Management System. Have you heard of this before, LMS? Who has heard LMS? Not that many, okay. So these spaces like Moodle, Blackboard, Canvas, whatnot, they are called LMS, or Learning Management Systems. And I read it again somewhere that, but these spaces are not more or don't give you more than what they promise. They just manage the learning process. But you have to give your human touch to it. You have to feel, you have to make it comfortable for your students. And some teachers even move out from the official LMS. And Mary was doing it in Singapore. She used Padlet. She just inserted the link to the Blackboard thing, okay, because she as a teacher did not feel comfortable enough in their own LMS, so she moved out her course. When I visited a university in Texas, San Antonio, yeah, my last year was crazy, that was still last year, then the teacher told me, I run all my courses on Facebook. And I asked, really? And why? And she said, because I hate our Blackboard system. And students don't like it, so officially the course is there, but otherwise we are on Facebook. So, yeah. So they use the learning management system, but they also use Padlet. as well, they develop instructional videos, okay? Because when you teach pronunciation, you cannot really teach it like, okay, you open your mouth in the following way. So you cannot really give instructions in text. It's better to produce a video. Good advice, if you think about like that for your students, like an instructional video, what I got from teachers from Singapore, make it as short as possible. Make it as short as possible. Analyze, what do you mean by short? What is a short video like? They said, 10 minutes is already way too long. Okay? So, or if it's like longer than 5 minutes, okay, then you break it into parts. You provide a task when they watch the video, and then there is a question. They type the answer, and they can only move on if you have they have typed the right answer. They watch, continue the video, there is another question coming. And there are interaction, there are these tools that help you in a way even edit a YouTube video to make it into interactive with these like those stops with a question. So they really take use that. They provide clear instructions, deadlines, and they provide options for their students. But just between, or just within these classroom walls, I have to tell you that they have a very good support team there, instructional designers. And they developed this course throughout perhaps 6 months or 8 months, and that was the only task for them to do. They didn't have to teach anything else during the development stage. So it's not so that you teach this course and that subject, and you do admin, and you invigilate and organize the entrance exam, and then you mark the entrance exam, and you do this admin and that admin. No, then their time was really focused on this. And they produced instructional videos with the help of a team of like video editors and instructional designers. So always consider that, so when thinking about blended learning. And what kind of student feedback was it that they got? Very good. The freedom to come to class or learn online is quite empowering for students. This is what the teacher trainees there said. Blended modules giving us the flexibility to complete our reflections at our own time, that is at their own speed. So they could make progress, you know, according to their own speed, and they appreciated it. And then imagine 1 year they switched back to the traditional face-to-face version of the course. And then the student feedback became like very bad what they got. So they had to go back to the blended version. And please note, Singapore works according to like these fines and rewards or carrot and stick. So if you as a teacher get very negative feedback from your students, they might reduce your salary or you get sacked, that is, you are fired, okay? So student feedback in Singapore at university level is like super, super, it's important in UVascular as well, but there it is super important because if it's not good, then you lose your job. Yeah. Oh my God, I'm already there. Good. I'm getting, as you can see, this kind of gives you the idea that Judith has reached the end of her presentation, and you're absolutely right. When you see background sources, this is the end of the story. So it has the message there, like, soon you can leave the room. But I thought that I would still share some further background sources in case you need them, I don't know, for your whatever purposes, for... I don't even know what is the course requirement here. Is there an exam or something you need to submit? You don't know. That's very good. That's good. But anyway, if you want to read more about these topics that I was talking about, then please consult these sources. And I think in all the cases, I added the link. So hopefully you can access the material. In case not, then please... Then please let me know. Okay. Yes, I let you leave the room. Thank you so much. Okay, good luck with the course. And I need the attendance sheet back. Okay, bye everyone.